Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Shelley Koffler, in for Chris Boyd, as we talk this hour about what we'll have to do to make sure we have enough water in the future. Texas has been in a mild state of panic, if you will, as it considers what to do about a dwindling supply of water, a growing population, and drought, which has turned portions of some of our reservoirs into muddy pits. So, what should we be doing? With me to talk about the challenges and solutions are Jody Puckett, the director of Dallas Water Utilities, which, by the way, is much bigger than Dallas. She oversees water and wastewater services for more than 2 million people in 28 North Texas communities. Jody Puckett is also vice chair of Region C. That's the group that works with the State Water Board to plan for future needs in this part of the state. Also with us is Ken Kramer. He is the Water Resources Chair and recently retired director of the Lone Star Chapter of the Sierra Club, and he just does all of this for fun now, I guess. Ken also serves on the state's Water Conservation Advisory Council, and that's a group that was set up by the legislature to advise the state on water policy. So thanks to both of you for being here today, because I know you're very busy. And Ken, a special thanks to you for driving up from Austin to be with us here in the studio.
Sure.
We're going to dig into this issue in just a minute with both of you. But first, we want to set up the conversation just a little bit by talking about what's happened since voters last November approved giving the State Water Board $2 billion. Now, that money is supposed to help finance at least $35 billion in new water projects. Water Board members are working on a plan for how the money will be spent. They've been traveling around the state to hear about potential new sources of water. And I talked with the State Water Board's Beck Brune about ideas that he thinks look promising.
There's definitely a lot of attention that's been placed of late on desalination, for example. We know in certain areas of the state there is an abundance of brackish groundwater. Of course, we know when we're talking about the Gulf of Mexico, there's an endless supply of seawater. It does appear that the technologies for how that water is treated are becoming more cost-effective. And again, the drought has brought on a new sense of awareness and the need and value for cities and water providers to have security looking forward to make sure we're going to have these supplies.
You've also been to Wichita Falls, and Wichita Falls, of course, has become nationally known for developing a process or using a process where they're going to recycle directly their wastewater for their drinking water. Do you see that as an approach that other cities may be using?
Definitely. I think it's an approach that everyone should consider. It's safe. It's reliable. You know, there is some stigma attached with what's taking place there, but when folks actually see the water and taste the water, I think they'll understand that it really is a good, clean, safe, quality, reliable product. One thing we haven't talked about that is a huge important part of all this is conservation in general. A benefit of drought is that it makes us all think differently about water and change our habits. And I think that all water providers are going back through how they do their business. You know, without having to invest any capital, a city, for example, can take a look at its water restriction schedules and find ways to conserve more water. And I think that's, you know, conservation is the lowest hanging fruit. And I think that's where we all need to look first.
So that was Beck Brune of the State Water Development Board, the Texas Water Development Board, talking about some options for where we find new water supplies. Our guests this hour are Ken Kramer with the Sierra Club, Jody Puckett, the director of Dallas Water Utilities. Let's start with that last issue that Beck Brune brought up, conservation. And Ken, you probably for two or three decades, I don't want to date you, but you've been working on water conservation at the state level for a very long time. How are we doing?
I think there's good news and bad news. You know, overall, we do see per capita water use in Texas on the average is dropping, in part because of education campaigns, in part because I think of greater public awareness with the droughts that we've experienced and continue to experience in many parts of the state. Plus, there's been a lot of focus and attention from the state level now on trying to improve the efficiency in our use of water. And the recently adopted Proposition 6 by the voters in its enabling legislation that accompanied that proposition, what is known as House Bill 4.
That's this $2 billion fund that was set up.
That's the $2 billion fund. That actually requires that not less than 20% of the funding from that source go to conservation or reuse projects, which is I think, very historic because for the first time we basically have a commitment of state funding to help communities' utilities actually practice conservation. I think that's going to really help make conservation more of a priority in the state.
So when we say conservation, what everybody thinks is, okay, I can only water my lawn 2 days a week. But what are we talking about? When we talk about conservation, Jody, as a utility, you've done a number of things. What does it mean?
Well, I think that the efforts toward addressing outdoor watering in an urban environment is really the low-hanging fruit. Again, not to overuse that. In the summer, over 50% of the water used by residential customers is for outside water use, or discretionary, as I would like to say. And so as people learn better how to manage their landscapes to make their properties presentable, that's the new landscape, for lack of a better term, that we're seeing. We implemented a strategic plan in 2005 that had things in it like irrigation audits, but toilet rebate programs and things like that to help people start to become more water wise about what they did.
Now, the toilet reuse program, there's something going on right now with that, right? Are these low flow toilets that you give away?
We called it a new throne for your home.
We thought that was catchy. Did a story about that.
Yeah, and so it's been quite helpful for folks. Toilets, oddly enough, use more water than people would guess. So we've been pretty successful with that program, and it's ongoing. It will wear itself out, so to speak, after time, because the plumbing fixture codes will kick in. But what it does is it helps us accelerate that indoor use savings for customers.
So are these free, or are they pay a small amount?
You can go to DallasCityHall.com or SaveDallasWater.com to find out how to get those toilets. The home has to be built prior to a certain time and so forth, so they can get vouchers or free toilets, up to two.
Jody, I hate to bring this up, but it used to be the case that Dallas got nailed, if not every year, quite often, for more higher per capita use than any other place in the state. I know you've worked hard on this issue. Was that fair?
Fair,
you didn't think so.
Fair's kind of a funny word. My story about the fair is the only one we have is over at Exposition.
And it's a great fair.
It's a state fair, right? But I think that, calculating how much water per capita is used is an odd comparison. However, I think the progress that we measure ourselves against ourselves. And so we've made great strides in reducing that. Lastly, implementing twice weekly as a water conservation technique, twice weekly watering. It's reduced our peak by, 10 to 15%. It's reduced our annual water use by at least that much. And so we're seeing great strides in that. And from a financial perspective, we've managed our sales numbers to address the plan for reducing consumption. So our strategy is to sell less water, and that's the new water we're buying with those increased costs.
There's some other things, Ken, that you, as a person who pays attention to this issue specifically, that you've been talking about. And as we spoke before, you said cities, municipalities, utilities, they need to work on the leakage. Water leaks out of pipes, they lose it. That's a lost opportunity.
Yeah, I think one of the key priorities for all utilities in the state is to look at their current transmission and distribution system of water and determine where they can plug some of those leaks in their system to avoid the loss of water, which is really waste of water. It's somewhat difficult to compare cities and utilities on the basis of water loss. A lot of people, including myself, from time to time throw around percentages of water loss, which are certainly pretty high in some circumstances. It's a little more complicated than that. It really depends upon how widespread your system is, how many connections you have, how many miles of pipe you have, what your soil conditions are. My hometown of Houston has a lot of leaks from burst pipes every year because of the type of soil. So you really have to stay on top of it. But we have some incredible amounts of water being lost in our transmission distribution systems for many utilities around the state. And fortunately, the state legislature has taken notice of that. They passed some legislation in 2013 to really require people, utilities who are coming to the Water Development Board for some of the funding that we've been talking about, to address any water loss through the financial assistance they get from the state, or to take other steps to make sure that they qualify, that they fall below a certain threshold of water loss. Because, you know, really trying to make sure we don't waste the water we already have in our system is really the first place to start in terms of what utilities can do on their own to really address our water situation.
Jody, what do we do in Dallas and in Region C, this part of North Texas, about leaky pipes? How big of an issue is that up here?
Well, I think I could speak to the Dallas retail system proper. The Dallas City Council has allocated hundreds of millions of dollars related to main replacement program. We're an aged utility, not an aging utility. And, of course, there's national data about the aging infrastructure in this country as a whole. So one of the things that we've incorporated is an active main replacement program. So it gets those old mains out of the system.
So that's built into your budget every
year, and
right?
And additionally, I think to Ken's point is that, you know, we've instituted, gosh, about 5 or 6 years ago, an active leak detection program where we actually go in and use different technologies, some borrowed from the petroleum industry, to seek out some of these leaks that never surface on transmission mains. In fact, we were talking about that this morning. We located about 30 unknown leaks that were on 12-inch and larger water mains, which are that transmission network. So going after those will get that water that we don't even know it's there because it hasn't even surfaced.
You know, we've been talking about really residential when we talk about conservation in your yards and your homes, then the system. What about businesses? What responsibilities do our big water-using businesses, breweries, IT companies, they use a lot of water. What responsibilities do they have, and how are we kind of holding their feet to the fire to make sure they're using best practices?
Well, I'll start by mentioning we have an industrial and commercial institutional program as part of our water conservation strategy, which is a rebate-style program that helps businesses with water-saving opportunities in their industry. I know that, for instance, the breweries in Fort Worth, they're looking at how they measure how many gallons of beer does it take to make a gallon of beer. And, you know, no water, no beer, no water, no coffee, you know. So I think that trying to help them focus on the bottom line really is part of that partnership we seek out.
Yeah, I think that what we call the ICI sectors, industrial, commercial, institutional, are sectors that we need to put more focus on. A lot of industries are doing a good job in terms of trying to reduce their water use because, to a great extent, it does hold down their cost of producing a product. And so you have some companies like Miller Coors, Coca-Cola, Anheuser-Busch, who have taken a number of steps to try to hold down their water use in order to make it more efficient in terms of their production. But there are a lot of other things that we sometimes don't think of, including like commercial institutions, enterprises that may actually have landscaping and things like that that they need to address.
Okay. Well, we're talking this hour about developing new water supplies. We can talk more about business responsibility as well. We're going to need to quench our Texas-sized thirst in the future. You can join our conversation by calling 800-933-5372, emailing think@kera.org, and we'll be back with more from Jody Puckett from Dallas Water Utilities, Ken Kramer with the Lone Star Chapter of Sierra Club after a short break.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree with concentrations in human rights, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Shelley Koffler. In today for Chris Boyd, we're going to pick up with our conversation here in the studio with Jody Puckett with the Dallas Water Utilities and Ken Kramer with the Lone Star Chapter of the Sierra Club. We're talking about the future water supply in Texas, how we make sure we have enough water for the future. And we're going to open our phone lines up for some questions now. We have a call that has come in from Fort Worth and Paul. Paul, welcome to Think.
Hi, Shelley. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling. Do you have a question?
I have to say that it just drives me crazy when the lawn whisperer is concerned about a little bit of water on my sidewalk, but the gas drilling people use 800,000 to 1.2 million gallons of water drilling a well. And then after that water's used, it's toxic. It can't be used for anything else.
So I know that's a good comment. What about a question? Do you have a question for our guests?
I guess, is there any way that that water can be reclaimed, or they can use another system for getting the gas out of the ground without using up all our water?
Okay, Paul, we'll talk about that just a little bit. He, of course, is talking about the water used in fracking and in gas drilling, primarily, I think, a little bit west of where we're sitting in Dallas, Tarrant County and the Barnett Shale. It has been a big issue over there. Ken, what about that? Is there a way to require recycling of water in a way that's not being done now? Is that an effort that's ongoing?
Water use by the oil and gas industry, especially for the fracking process, is an issue, not just up here in North Texas, but also in the Eagle Ford area, which is South Texas and South Central Texas. And I think increasingly in the western part of the state, too, because we have shale formations in many more parts of Texas than just North Texas. There is a trend, I think, among several of the gas companies to try to do recycling of the water that is used in the fracking process. And I think you're going to see more and more companies do that on their own. It has some benefits to them in terms of water availability, in terms of the price of production, and also, frankly, in terms of sort of political and social acceptance on the part of the communities, many of which are water challenged in and of themselves and don't look very kindly on the companies coming in and using that much water. Now, I don't think it's universal, and we have a long way to go in terms of making recycling the norm. And I think it probably is going to require, at least in some areas of the state, that either the state legislature or the Railroad Commission step in and require recycling of water. And frankly, there's a lot of interest on the part of legislators about that because they're hearing from their constituents who are concerned, especially in drought times, about the heavy water use by the fracking industry. It may not be that big a number statewide, but in certain areas of the state, it is, I think, critical that the industry address their water usage.
Jody, let me ask you to comment on that, because this puts a utility, maybe not yours because you don't have a lot of gas drilling here, but this puts a utility in the middle of supporting business, which is helping the economy, and on the other side of it, maintaining an adequate water supply for the other users. How does a utility bridge that gap?
Well, I think that to some of Ken's comments, it makes that difficult. There are some communities that would be really strapped if they're a small community relying on wells and they were drawing on wells to drill these gas wells. However, I think in the Tarrant County area, not that I'm going to defend them or whatever, but I think it's a small amount of water related to their versus their whole system sales, and so I think it's not as big a issue. But it's still an important issue, and I really agree wholeheartedly with Ken's comments, and I think that the recycling of that water is by far the best approach because it accomplishes a couple things. The gas well drilling helps us from an economic standpoint. But it also better uses the product, the water product. So,
real quickly, Ken, before we go to another call, what is the likelihood in the business climate we have at the state legislature, what is the likelihood that we're going to get restrictions on water use for fracking and gas drilling?
Well, it sort of goes two ways, I think. We're probably going to look at a more conservative legislature coming up this session, which may make it difficult to have more regulations on business. By the same token, I see even some conservative legislators from areas where their constituents are concerned about water use by the oil and gas industry leaning toward having more of a requirement or more focus on recycling of water by industry.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I think we need to go to a break here. You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Shelley Koffler. Oops, they tell me I'm a little ahead of schedule there. I'm so sorry. So we can't take another call here. This is what happens when you bring in an amateur. Okay. All right. Verna from Dallas, thank you for joining us here on Think. We want to take your call. Do you have a question?
Hi. I wanted to let you know that I was able to reduce my water consumption by 50%. That's 50. I wanted to let people know that it can be done.
Tell us how you did it.
Great variety of ways, most of which are already talked about online. But I overseeded my lawn with drought-resistant seed. I replaced some existing landscaping with drought-resistant plants. I took shorter showers. If I used my washing machine, I did a full load. Same with my dishwasher.
Great.
I reused gray water.
Okay, Verna, thank you very much. Those are all great suggestions, and we'll just ask Jody. Jody, when you hear something like that, that's probably music to your ears.
Oh, yeah, congratulations. Thanks for the commercial. I think that's exactly what we're trying to drive home. I think it's important for people to understand if they have 5,000 square feet of turf and they watered an inch, they use over 3,000 gallons. And so if they do that four times a month, their bill's going to be pretty high. And that's 12,000 gallons of drinkable water they're putting on their yard. So I'm an advocate of what the caller was suggesting. I've done some of the same things. So you go, girl, is what I want to say.
You go, girl. Okay. We want to talk about all these new technologies, these new strategies that Beck Bruhn mentioned, desalination and so forth. But we do have a number of calls, so we do want to take some of them if we can right now. And we are speaking with Tim in Southlake. Welcome to Think, Tim.
Hi. Yes, I'm curious why or if there's any progress moving on three pipe. Having gray water sent back to the house to do everything other than tap water, because we can do gray water and shower it and wash everything else, but are new developments being legislated to solve that problem? Because I've been to Singapore where they have new water. Huge issue. Singapore is surrounded by water, but they're taking all their water and recirculating it.
Okay.
But why aren't we just requiring a new development to put three water systems in so we don't waste it all and cost that extra, that last whatever percent it is, to make it pure to drink is so expensive.
Okay, Tim, we're going to talk about that a little bit. You mentioned gray water, and I had a conversation with Jody before the show about gray water because I think maybe people don't understand what it is and how it can and maybe shouldn't be used. Can you first tell us what gray water is?
Well, gray water is typically washing machine water, can be even shower water. The state has a definition for gray water and quote-unquote black water as it relates to the level of contamination or constituents in it. So one of the things the caller mentioned about a kind of a three-pipe system, I think that where building code allows for those types of things, the retrofitting of that is a bit of a challenge. And so I think rainwater harvesting, gray water systems are going to be used based on the strength of that property owner. I'm not sure I will want to manage personally a gray water system in my home, but I think that there are places for that. But there is no development requirement for new developments anywhere in the Metroplex that I've heard of, and I'm not sure of anywhere in the state. Ken
well,
might have
this
a comment.
Is interesting. I used to live in the Austin area, mm-hmm. out by Lake Travis, where they kept building, 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 and there's not enough water. So what about that? Should we tie the development legislation or the ability to develop to available water?
Well, I think personally, I'm in favor of requiring gray water systems in new development. I think we're missing a big opportunity in Texas because we have a growing economy. We have a lot of new construction going on, both residential and commercial and otherwise. And we have some missed opportunities by not requiring gray water systems to be implemented in that new construction. I realize that people don't like to have things mandated, but I think it's important for us to keep in mind that it's extremely wasteful and extremely costly to the ratepayers and the taxpayers to continue to have the levels of treatment that we have for potable water and then put that potable water on our outdoor landscaping and things of that nature. And gray water, I think, is one of the answers to our future water needs being met.
So if I'm building a new house, and I feel like you do philosophically, can I say to the developer, and would the utility be okay with this, hey, I want a gray water system in this house?
Well, Absolutely. Yeah. Generally speaking, if a builder or a customer, new homeowner wants that kind of system or a new commercial enterprise, it can be done. Now, I've heard there are some questions about the state's regulation of groundwater, some issues that may have to be addressed in order to facilitate that process. And so I'm not saying it's universal, and certainly some utilities may have different policies that may be problematic in that regard. But generally speaking, if you want that kind of system, you should try to pursue it.
Okay. We have a number of callers here, so let's go now to Keith in Dallas. Keith, welcome to Think. I think your question is for Jody.
Yes, and thank you for taking my call. I have a two-part question. Number one is, before we have to go to stage four watering restrictions, it would be very nice if the city of Dallas would enforce the existing restrictions, which I see violated daily. Every time I leave the house in the car, I see one or more yards watering on days they're not authorized to water. And number two is, why aren't we encouraging people not to water at all? For example, I haven't watered my yard in 14 years, and it's green most of the time. In July and August, it turns brown for a while, just like the grass in the park a block away from me does. And then when it starts to rain again, it turns green. And I have no water bill for watering the grass, period.
So, Keith, you have a natural vegetation in your yard?
It's a Bermuda grass, yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll ask Jody to comment on that. Jody, I'm sure you hear this all the time. My neighbor waters all the time, and what are you going to do about it?
Right. Well, when that happens, we'd like for them to report that to 311, as well as my office at DallasCityHall.com if they feel the need. Because what we use is a benevolent enforcement, kind of a velvet hammer approach, so to speak. But we will go after folks that aren't complying. And generally what happens is that we'll send them a letter and say, hey, did you know that you were violating the rules? And they go, oh, and they correct their behavior. Sometimes they don't, and, we can push that envelope a little further. We don't have water police out there right now, and hope we don't have to get to that point. But if the caller would call 311, and give me those addresses, we'll follow up with those customers because we want them to comply as well. And thanks for helping.
And there is a potential fine.
Sure.
It starts
at $250.
So it's hefty.
It starts at $250.
Okay. Let's take another call. This one comes from Richard in Dallas. Richard, welcome to Think.
Oh, thank you very much, and thanks for the program. How is it that Dallas water customer cities like Farmers Branch aren't required to restrict watering while other areas are?
Okay, we'll let Jody answer that question.
Our contracts, first of all, the city contracts with, as Shelley mentioned earlier, a number of wholesale customers, and they're required to have like conservation requirements or conservation plans as part of their systems. And so we don't have, like a lot of wholesale suppliers, we don't have direct jurisdiction over how a city behaves. So, one of the things we're looking at going forward is how to include the future behavior in our strategic plan to get folks more into alignment to make sure that they're pulling their load, so to speak. A lot of our customer cities have implemented watering restrictions and things like that already, and some have not. Farmers Branch apparently has not.
So. It gets a little complicated because there are retailers and there are wholesalers. And so you are both the wholesaler and the retailer to Dallas. You operate the Dallas system, but then you sell the water to these other cities, right? And it's up to them to decide how to restrict.
That's correct. And ultimately, if we got to a point, you know, we can actually ration water. Hopefully we won't get to that point, but.
Let me interject just one thing, and I'm not sure about Dallas's wholesale water contracts, but some of the water suppliers I know in the Dallas-Fort Worth area have what are called take-or-pay contracts with their customers, their cities that they sell water to, which basically says that you're going to pay for a certain amount of water from your wholesale supplier each year, regardless of whether or not you use that amount of water. Which, in my mind, creates a little bit of a disincentive for some of those customer cities to really aggressively push water conservation, because if they don't have the revenues coming in from their water sales, they're basically going to have to cough up more money to pay for the take-or-pay contracts. That's something that I think needs to be addressed in the future. It's a very difficult, complicated situation to deal with, but you can't just have people paying for water that they're not going to use and then they don't feel they have the incentive to push for water conservation.
This has been an issue with you for a long time.
Right.
Jody wants to say something.
I think one of the important parts about these, especially these water supply contracts, is any water service, high fixed costs associated with that service. It's an infrastructure-intensive business. And so the take-or-pay contracts can be structured in such a way where they have to cover the debt service. This is North Texas Municipal Water District has been a target of this conversation. Our contracts are similar, but we do have a volume component where they could, if they use less, they'll pay a little less. But the challenge is that when you build the church for Easter Sunday and all the parishioners don't show up, you still have to pay the, you know, have to pay the bills. So I think that that's, you know, that's the opposite side of that conversation.
It's complicated, isn't it? Well, we're talking today about what we'll do to make sure we have enough water for the future here in Texas. How will it affect you? What will you pay? And we'll continue our conversation with our experts, Jody Puckett, Director of Dallas Water Utilities, and Ken Kramer with the Sierra Club, right after this short break.
Funding for THINK comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree with concentrations in human rights, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
And you're listening to THINK on KERA 90.1. I'm Shelley Koffler, in today for Chris Boyd. Our guests are helping us understand the challenges and the possible solutions for meeting our future water supply here in Texas. Ken Kramer is the Water Resources Chairman for the Lone Star Chapter of the Sierra Club and a member on the State Water Conservation Advisory Panel. Jody Puckett is Director of Dallas Water Utilities, and she's Vice Chair of Region C. That's the group that plans for water needs throughout this part of the state, throughout North Texas. We have some callers. We're going to take a call, and then we're going to go back to a subject I know we all want to get to, and that is all these other options that are being discussed for how we will create new water supplies in the future. So let's go now to Jerry in McKinney. Jerry, do you have a question for our guests?
Yeah, it's a great show. Thanks for having it. I happen to be a pool builder, and my question is, why, for example, a few years back, Lucas, some of the surrounding cities wouldn't allow you to build a pool. Well, that directly affects me, obviously. Why is it that building a pool or filling up a pool, emptying the pool, et cetera, in the grand scheme of things is rather small, but that's one of the first things that cities start to focus on?
Well, we'll talk to our guests about that. So building a pool, car washes also complain. They get in trouble and they're asked to curtail. Jody, what is it about pools?
Well, one of the things I think that pools, car washes, again, discretionary, outdoor discretionary use always gets, you know, targeted first. I think just recently, the region went through some reviews of the drought management plans, and a lot of some of these outdoor uses have been pushed to later stages. If Lucas only had water, if they were in stage four and they only had water for you to use inside, I could see how they might think that maybe a temporary moratorium on pools was a good idea. But I have personally, I have a pool, and I've kind of looked at the paradox of pools.
So there won't be any problems in Dallas.
So, well, I'm not saying that that won't be, but a pool will use about an inch of water a week due to evaporation, which is the example we talked about earlier about a 5,000 square foot turf uses about an inch of water a week when it doesn't rain. So it's kind of a paradox about really how that resource is used. And so I think that's the challenge about pools.
I want to go back to where we started, and that is the issue of conservation. Can we conserve our way to the future? Can we conserve enough that we won't need to develop new water supplies? Or do we need to come up with some new options? And Ken, I'll start with you because I know conservation, you preach the good message of conservation all the time. Is it enough?
Well, you know, that answer really sort of depends upon the community and the utility and the source of water. One of the earlier callers talked about how she had reduced her residential water use by 50% in half. And I think Jody mentioned how the limitation to outdoor watering twice a week in Dallas is basically helping to save a considerable amount of water, especially at peak times. So it's pretty clear to me that we can get a long way down the road with conservation in general. And we really have only, I think, tapped a small potential or a small bit of the potential for water conservation in Texas. But this doesn't mean that that's necessarily the case for every community. And I think we in the environmental community recognize that some communities, because of their population, their growth, and a lot of other factors, may have to look at different types of supply alternatives in addition to conservation as the first priority and more effective drought response. So the question is, what are those additional supply measures that are going to, on balance, provide the water needed with the least impact on the environment and in a cost-effective way? And I think that's where the focus needs to be in the future. That, to our mind, means that we're going to look more closely at things like maybe aquifer storage recovery, where that is feasible, where you can take water and put it into an aquifer and store it there rather than a surface water reservoir, cut down on evaporation, and have that water available when it's needed during drought times or other periods of shortage. That doesn't necessarily mean that what is known as ASR, aquifer storage recovery, is going to work everywhere in the state, but certainly San Antonio has proved that in their area where they take Edwards water during normal rainfall times that they're permitted to take and store some of that water in another aquifer where there's storage space, they can then use that water during drought periods like we've been experiencing in Texas recently. So that is the type of alternative technology that I think we need to put more focus on.
Is that primarily a solution for communities like those in Central Texas that are drawing their water from the aquifer directly?
Well, it's not just, a possibility for communities that are dependent upon aquifer water right now, but it can be used by other utilities which may be taking surface water sources, using that water, and then treating their wastewater and putting it into an aquifer nearby. Again, it's going to depend upon the geologic and hydrologic conditions in certain parts of the state, and there may be obviously certain parts of the state where that's more of a possibility than others. But we certainly should put more attention on the research to see where that is feasible, and I think you're going to find that we're going to be able to do a lot of that in Texas in the future.
I want to talk about what's going on in Wichita Falls because there's just a lot of interest, I think, from the water conservation community, but then also the community in general, because it's gotten national media coverage, and that is they are directly recycling their wastewater. So instead of pushing it out into a big surface water pond area or, you know, pushing the treated water downstream, and there's certainly nothing wrong with it when it comes, it's clean, you know, to another body of water, they are directly taking that pipe and connecting it back to the treatment plant, right? And it becomes part of your drinking water supply. So recycling wastewater for drinking water, a lot of people, there's a yuck factor to that. But Jody, what do you think? Is it something we're going to be doing more of in other communities around the state?
Well, I think it's exciting, really, in an odd sort of way. The trailblazing that Wichita Falls is really leading and out of necessity. I think so that technology is available for other suppliers, it may make these programs a little more acceptable and then more cost effective than, for instance, building a wetlands project or picking it up downstream and then pumping it back up into a lake. You know, a lot of wastewater now is reused indirectly, more so than people really think about. And so I think that all our plans include a big piece of that. Water reuse and conservation make up 25% of the Region C's plans for additional water. And so I think that it's exciting to see that progress. I always felt like if the astronauts could do it, you know, certainly we could too.
You imagine it being used here in Dallas? Is there any
discussion? Oh, absolutely. It's technology that I think that we want to look at as far as how it gets integrated into what we do. Our volumes are, you know, a lot larger than Wichita Falls and a lot more complex. But yet the technology is proving itself out. And so I think that it creates very unique opportunities for water suppliers to look at that.
Is this an exciting technology from your point of view, Ken?
Yes, I think wastewater recycling is going to be more and more a part of our water supply in the future in Texas, including the wastewater recycling for potable use. We've had a lot of wastewater recycling for non-potable uses, such as irrigation of golf courses, industrial uses, and things like that. And I think it only makes sense that we be as efficient as possible in the use of our existing water supplies, because this can help to either avoid or delay the need to look at other types of water supplies which may have negative environmental consequences, like a big new surface water impoundment, Marvin Nichols, not to mention any names.
The most controversial in our area.
But the one caution I have about the wastewater recycling, of course, is that we need to make sure that we approach this in a balanced way, because in some instances, those so-called return flows where the wastewater has been treated and then put back into a stream or put into a different stream have provided the in-stream flows or the freshwater inflows to coastal bays and estuaries that are important for the maintenance of riparian habitat, marine habitat, our seafood industry along the Texas coast, which also has tourism implications, other economic implications. You know, one of the things that I have seen in my decades of working on the environment is sometimes there is a tendency for folks to embrace some new technology or some new idea as a panacea for solving all of our particular problems. Like, you know, desalination is the answer to all of our water problems, all of our water supply problems. Well, the truth is that there's usually not one solution. We need to look at a wide range of solutions, and we need to balance those solutions with the other values that we have in our society. In Texas, I think we have a great love and a great sort of tendency to value the outdoors, the hunting and fishing opportunities, both inland and along the Texas coast. And we don't want to lose those values by not providing the water that's needed for fish and wildlife habitat and the water quality protection and recreational uses.
So, for example, if we did direct water recycling here, you would have to make sure you released enough into the stream so that the people down in Houston and then all the way down in
Galveston Bay.
Galveston Bay.
I'm kidding about Houston. But in fact, we have currently water reuse permits in place that take that into account as part of a downstream requirement. And so I think that since most of the water we use is imported from other basins, i.e. the Sabine River Basin as well as the localized Trinity Basin, that water goes into the Trinity currently and goes on down for the use of others currently. But that's part of our plan, to use some of that in the long run to provide future supply.
In the few minutes we have left, we cannot have this conversation without talking about Marvin Nichols. Marvin Nichols is the reservoir that's sort of in the plan for Region C, Jody, our part of the state. It's the most contentious. Can you, and I know right now we're waiting to find out if the Water Development Board's going to leave it in the state plan or take it off the table. Lot of emotion wrapped around this. Why do you believe that Marvin Nichols, I'm guessing you do, needs to stay in the plan?
I think that the regional planning process was set up to establish strategies for regional providers to try to achieve. The permitting processes that are in place will ferret out the details of that, how big a Marvin Nichols might be. Ken and I were talking earlier, said we're working on a study with the Sulphur River Basin Authority to look at what might be the best project that would be available in the Sulphur River Basin, which is where the Marvin Nichols is. Marvin Nichols just didn't pop up on the radar. It's been in Water Development Board plans, regional water supplier plans for many, many years.
Can we meet our water needs without Marvin Nichols?
Yes, we can. We have to go to a number of other places.
Might be more expensive.
It will be more expensive. Toledo Bend is an option that's been in the Regency plan. It's 300 miles away, give or take, and uphill. And so there's existing water supplies that are further away. The City of Dallas, as an agency, has Wright-Patman in its plan. Wright-Patman is also in the Sulphur River Basin. And so I think that what we hope to conclude is the right project for the Sulphur River Basin. But I think that the planning process has to run its course. And so that would be why Marvin Nichols, I believe, needs to stay in the plan.
In the minute we have left, Ken, I'm so sorry. We saved this for last, but let's wind it up by giving us your thoughts on Marvin Nichols.
Well, the other perspective about the regional water planning process, I think, has to include acknowledgement of the fact that part of the regional and state water planning process requires regional water planning groups to look at the impact of various water management strategies on agricultural, natural resources, and other important considerations within the region where a supply project might be built. And that's what Region D in Northeast Texas has basically looked at and said, the building of the Marvin Nichols Reservoir is going to have a number of negative impacts in our region that need to be considered. That's really where the contention, the interregional conflict comes.
Thank you very much. And I know there's more to come on that probably very, very soon. I want to thank both of you, Ken Kramer with the Sierra Club, Jody Puckett with Dallas Water Utilities, for helping us better understand some of these challenges and opportunities with our water supply. And you can find more information on the future of water in Texas on our Think page at kera.org. Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington, and you can contact us via email at think@kera.org. I'm Shelley Koffler, and thank you for joining us.